Thank you for tuning in to Hacks and Hobbies with your host, Junaid. We're visited by our amazing guests coming from all walks of life. We want to learn their story, their struggles, and their journey on how they got to where they are today. So stick around.
Welcome back to Hacks and Hobbies. Today we have someone who has literally gone from producing visual effects on Independence Day and Transformers to helping entrepreneurs around the world find their focus and build healthier workdays, is it? Stephen Puri is the founder and CEO of The Suka Company, a focus app designed to help millions achieve balance, productivity, and fulfillment. He's also had an extraordinary journey as a newscaster, software engineer, Hollywood producer, and now entrepreneur. In part one, we'll unpack Stephen's journey, the pivots that shaped him, and what it means to chase Suka happiness from self-fulfillment. Stephen, oh my God, I gotta update the name. Like, this is not Elaine. We just talked about
the other Elaine.
The other Elaine. Stephen, there we go. All right, so let me zoom back in. Stephen, welcome to the show. I'm so excited to get this conversation started.
Indeed. I hope it is an entertaining and maybe a helpful one. We'll see if we get there.
Absolutely. You know, as long as we have fun, I think that's what really matters. I was looking at some, I was at Podcasting Morning Chat earlier today, and they're like, they got data back and people are actually dropping off from listening to podcasts because not the audio quality, not the video quality. It's just that they found them boring. So we want to make sure that we bring the fun in the game.
So okay, Stephen, so let's get topless right now. Come on.
Yes. Let's take it all down. It is pretty warm here. So, Stephen, you've had such a multifaceted career from news, software, engineering, film, tech. Looking back, what connected all of these dots for you besides the one thing that we already all know?
You know, I think in hindsight, we can always ascribe meaning to things that maybe were not, you know, intentional. Mm-hmm. So I will tell you that a number of things in my life have been very lucky occurrences that I have then recognized and tried to work very hard to make something of them. Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're right. When I was in DC, I grew up in Northern Virginia. Happened to be invited to audition for this youth news show. It was the top, youth show in the DC Baltimore market. Yeah. Did that. That was super fun. And I also at the time had been training as a software engineer because my parents were both engineers at IBM. Mm-hmm. Did I think when I went to USC in Los Angeles, that would be the moment that film went digital and suddenly I could use those skills? No, I think it was not part of the master plan, but it sure worked out well. So that's sort of was my backdoor into film, being more engineering minded and getting into digital film. And as you mentioned, you know, I did about 14 films, including Independence Day, produced the digital effects. So that was a great way to meet a lot of directors and get my feet wet and then say, okay, I want to be a studio executive.
You know, that's so amazing. I mean, I've always aspired for films. Like, I've literally teach people about film production and you know what it takes. And in fact, that was my backdoor into my hobbies, into photography and filmmaking, was film storytelling and all of those things. And it's really cool to see, you know, we're going to do what our parents ask us, you know, go to engineering school and whatnot. I mean, I come from that background. I went to college for web development and information tech as well. Right here I am doing a podcast. So it's really cool to see that, you know,
it's
our passions,
right?
Our passions like come together. As you were going and doing the software development, you connected with Hollywood producers. What were some of the things that you learned from starting out at IBM and then moving into visual effects? Because I'm sure there's some kind of things that you brought from one world to the other world.
I'll tell you this. IBM, probably the two biggest things I learned were, number one, have a great mentor. And I did have this great guy, Dave Gillis, there, who taught me all this stuff that they don't teach you in class. They don't teach you in books, right? It's just like, this is actually how to frame your thinking about this problem, solve it with this architecture, right? He's amazing. Second thing was, wow, what an amazing waste of money. when I was there, the stuff that I saw that was just, everyone was sort of distracted and doing stuff and being social. And I was like, how is anything getting done here? Mm. So I remember that was an experience for me very early in my career of, this is how work works. These people don't see, I'm working harder in school than these people are working here in this federal systems division of IBM. So those are two big takeaways. I'll tell you, probably the first post IBM takeaway from work was really about creativity. It's kind of a funny story because when I was looking to start working my junior, senior year at USC, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, you know what? This whole film thing is taking off. I have some skills that apply to it. So I started working at a company that did trailers for music videos, for films, commercials, all that sort of stuff, right? Owned by these two guys who had been doing this about 20 years. Very well established, very well respected in the industry. All the studio guys knew them.
Yeah.
So I had a job when I was about 20 that was when the studios would send us rough cuts of movies, I would assign them to writer producers. Mm-hmm. I'd be like, oh, you know, Junaid, we got in the new Will Ferrell comedy from Sony. You did that great job last summer on the Will Ferrell comedy. They want, you know, why don't you write this, right? Yeah. So you'd take it home, you'd watch it, you write a trailer, and, you know, go from there. So Jeff, who's one of the two principals, comes to my little, you know, shitty office one day and he's like, hey, he was calling me Stevie, which is weird. No one else calls me Stevie. He's like, Stevie, do you know Bart? And I was like, yeah, there's a guy in the vault named Bart. Yes, I've met him. He's like, you ever give Bart a trailer to write? I was like, you're talking about Bart, the guy in the vault who like, drives the tapes around and gets coffee and stuff, right? He's the same one. He goes, yeah, I got an instinct about him, Stevie. And I was like, okay. Jeff, you're the boss. Done. I will find something for him. So I found this like Warner Brothers B title that had like a month deadline, gave it to him. Jeff comes to my office 2 days later. Stevie, how's Bart doing? Jeff, I gave him this title, whatever it was, like 2 days ago. I'll ask him on Monday. I don't want to stress him out. Yeah. He goes, okay, fair. What else you give him? Jeff, he's never ridden a trailer in his life. And Jeff looks at me and goes, Stevie, let me tell you how creativity works. It's always about the other thing. If you give Bart one trailer to think about, he's going to stare at that movie with little beads of sweat coming down his temples. And he's going to write the most obvious B version of that trailer you can imagine.
Yeah.
Because the part of your brain that does the, chocolate, peanut butter, what do those taste like together? He's like, that's not the part that you think you're thinking with. He's like, you got to give him something else to think about. It's how creativity works. And can I tell you, in the intervening 20 years, how many times I've seen Jeff proven correct, both in film as well as in tech. And maybe, I don't know if you've ever experienced this. Have you ever had that weird, great idea when you were washing the dishes or showering or driving or walking? It's like
all the time.
You're busy with something else, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's a great book on the neuroscience about that called The Net and the Butterfly, about like capturing ideas that talks about the default mode and the executive mode networks and why it is that that baby-like weird creativity happens when the adult in your brain is busy doing something else, right? It's almost like I'm unsupervised. Ooh, I wonder what a cell phone tastes like, you know?
You're so right, Stephen, because when the left side of the brain is busy calculating, guess what? The right side of the brain is like coming up with new ideas. I'm like, oh my God, what if this can happen? What if this can happen? Right. And you kind of get distracted. And I think it's really obvious with people with ADHD, it's so much more apparent. So it's really cool that Stevie, the gentleman, he's like, give him more stuff to do because then he's going to fire up. It's like, okay, I'm not just thinking about this. I'm like now watching multiple things. How can I interlace the two things or come up with the thing that's going to blow my mind? So what happened? Now I'm intrigued. Like what happened with those trailers? Did they come out really badass?
Bart is a professional trailer producer in Hollywood now.
Oh my God.
Right? It launched his career.
Yeah.
And Jeff, to this day, Jeff is a friend. I don't really know how he spotted that. that the guy delivering the coffee and the, you know, driving tapes around had talent for writing trailers, but he did. It's interesting, though, that you bring up ADHD, because I'll tell you this. In the course of developing Suka, one of the members is an ADHD coach. Mm-hmm. She and I got to know each other because she brought a lot of, you know, her clients to the app to say this really helps. So one day she said to me, "Stephen, have you ever been diagnosed?" And I was like, "You know, I haven't." She's like, "Just friend to friend, I think you might want to go sometime and just, you know, self-knowledge, do that." So I was like, "Okay, cool, Ariana." So I went to a doctor and found out she was spot on right. And with me, it doesn't really present as hyperactivity as much as the other parts of ADD, right? Sure. And that was a really interesting insight for me, because I do realize part of what a bunch of the creative people that I worked with, you know, in film do is they do that process of like letting the front of the mind and the back of the mind kind of like play around and dance and, you know, have unsupervised associations. And I think part of why I created a focus app was wrestling with that to say, you know what? I need to sit here and code. I need to, like, today I'm working on a new version of our marketing site. It is an intense thing of focusing and trying to get it right. But I know my brain kind of wants to say, oh, well, you know, I could go work on that blog post I wanted to write a little bit and then come back to this. And like, oh yeah. And, you know,
yes.
Did I put the laundry in? I could put the laundry in, you know, all those little things.
Oh my God, Stephen, I do that all the time instead of, you know, it's almost got kind of like procrastinating a little bit, but not really. I'm like, hey, I got this work done. I got this work done. I did the dishes. Do I need to do more laundry? You know, we're always kind of like pushing away because our creative mind wants to do it. But then the other part of the mind, like, no, you might get distracted. So, you know, might as well just stay distracted.
And don't get me going on procrastination.
Yeah.
Because I had a moment where I had to get real with myself because I procrastinate. And it would present usually in the morning when I had to get going. Because I would be like, oh, Junaid, you know, tomorrow morning at 9, I'm going to do X, Y, Z. I'm going to work on my website. But at 9:15, I'd find myself returning emails that were maybe not a huge priority, you know, or, you know, finding, scrolling the news or doing something. And when I looked at it, the reason I was procrastinating was I had this feeling of almost like paralysis or like overwhelm, where I was like, I would look at my task list and I'd be like, there's so many things on there. How do I get them done? Or something on there was so massive, it's like, I'll never finish that this morning before, you know, our podcast. How, why even make a dent in it? So those are kind of things I realized push me to say, oh, well, I'll just do this other thing because I can get this done quickly. I'll go put the laundry in and I'm going to go return these emails, blah, blah, blah. And then the website at 11 a.m. is not done, right?
It's not done.
Yeah.
So true. So true. Well, let's come back to you, Stephen. How did producing Independence Day and other massive films shape the way you think about teams and execution? Because I'm sure that is a huge part of what made those movie films possible too.
Well, let me clarify one thing. I produced the digital effects for Independence Day, right? So
digital
Roland
effects, okay.
And yeah, Roland and Dean were the producers. Roland's also the director, and Dean was also a writer, and, you know, great guys. So that was, for me, you know, very early in my career, an amazing sort of moment, because not only did we win the Academy Award for the visual effects, which, you know, it takes a village, it takes a lot of people to make that movie, right? But, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats, and Roland and Dean and I got along really well. So we discussed starting a company together, and that was the first company I started. It was called Centropolis Effects. We built it to about 82 people and raised about $15 million in venture for that. That was my first exit. After 4 years of running that, we sold that to Das Verk at about a 6x multiple, which was, you know, when you're 28, you're like, oh my God, you know, I built a company with these guys. We all did this great movie together. And, you know, I exited. Like, I must be really, you know, in the 20s, you think you're smarter than you are and better looking than you are. You know? Later, you know, life comes in, but at that moment, I was like, oh, this is really cool. And that's when I decided, I think I now want to go from making just a portion of someone's movie to making a whole movie. But the question you asked was really about teams, right?
Yes.
And leaders, leadership. And something I found very true, and this is so applicable today with the tug of war over hybrid and remote work versus in office all the time, right? Is Something I find to be true about that tug of war is it comes from a lot of mistrust or distrust.
Yes.
On the part of the leadership, right? Because they're like, well, if I can't see you, if we're not underneath these same fluorescent lights 10 hours a day, 5 days a week, how do I know what you're doing? Right?
Yeah.
Which
absolutely
in some cases is absolutely valid. And also there's some activities that are better in person. Like mm-hmm. in film, when you're sitting around breaking story, you know, when you and I are sitting around going like, you know, Junaid, the third act doesn't work right. What should we do? I have never been on a Zoom or a Google Meet that has the same energy and quality of ideas than we're sitting around a coffee shop or on a conference table or by a whiteboard. You know, so let's just say that. But the rest, there are a lot of activities that are great to do wherever, right? And I believe that work should be measured by the effect of what you do as opposed to how long it took you or where you did it. Because that's ultimately what your organization wants is you change the world, not you worked 10 hours today, but you did stupid stuff. You know what I mean? So I say all this because to bring it back to leadership, very often that distrust or mistrust is not a problem with remote versus in office. It's a hiring problem. Because as a leader, you do two things very well. You say, this is our mission. You can articulate, we are here to cure cancer. We are here to develop this new battery technology. We're here to figure out cold fusion, flying car, whatever it, right? Mm-hmm. And you express to people, and here is the culture. Here's how we do it. Here's how we're going to treat each other. Here's how we're going to treat our customers. Here's how we're going to treat our competitors. And if you do those two things well, you will hire people who are engaged with what you do and how you do it. So let me tell you something. If you and I are working together and you hire me and you are, you know, set out, you've said, we're all going to cure cancer. Mm-hmm. And you know, my mom died of cancer. You don't have to watch me to know that I'm working on trying to cure cancer. I saw my mom die in a hospital bed of that.
Yeah.
It's hiring well, saying you are actually invested. You care about what we're doing, not, hey man, this goes on a long list of jobs you did for a year and then you job hopped. You know, like that's bad hiring if you're wondering about that, I think.
You're absolutely right, because you've defined the why for the company. You've defined the culture for the company, right? Once you have those whys and the culture, it's obviously a perfect fit, right? Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak wouldn't have worked together if they didn't have the same mission and vision for Apple when they started, right? So having those mission and vision is so important. And whenever I'm talking to entrepreneurs, I ask them, hey, why are you doing what you're doing? Why are you teaching this?
Great question. Because that is a fantastic question.
Right. Once you have that dialed in, then you can bring in other people around the same umbrella. So I love that, you know, you focus on the leadership, bringing in the right people so that they can all work together.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's move on to the next segment, Hollywood lessons for entrepreneurs, right? Because I've seen a movie, whenever a movie comes together, you know, you mentioned it takes a village to put the movie together. It's almost like you're starting a new company. It's a startup, right? I'm starting a movie.
You nailed it. And not a lot of people outside of film understand what you just said.
Yeah. And people don't realize how much work goes into just to come up with the idea and all the different things you're doing. So you were inside some of the biggest franchises, Die Hard, Wolverine, Transformers. Mm-hmm. What was that? What did working at that level of Hollywood teach you about focused leadership and storytelling? I mean, we talked about leadership a little bit, but
Let's talk about storytelling and then we'll talk about focus for a moment.
Perfect.
So, for those listening at home or playing along in their cars, right? I can't emphasize how for you or for your children, if you're raising children, the understanding of story will help you in every part of your life, because it is fundamentally how we explain to each other life. And story is really about conflict. There is no story without conflict. Mm. So if you can become articulate to say, this is our heroic force, which could be, you know, embodied in a man or a woman or people, right? Yeah. This is the opposing force. And these are the things inside this heroic force that have to be overcome or they're going to lose. It'll be a Greek tragedy versus a great success story, right? If you can set things up clearly like that, you will realize that is a story of fundraising. That is a story of your PTA meeting. That is the story of, you know, fixing your car. It is, life is simply that story where you can encapsulate saying there is this force against this force. This is how it's going to play out. And you can make anything fast. You can make changing the oil in your car. You can make, you know, your parent teacher meeting. You can be whatever. Yeah. Fascinating if you understand the conflict. And then people are like, and then what happened? And then what happened? You know? And so I can't underline that enough, but
yeah,
and there are some fantastic storytellers, teachers, books on storytelling. So it'll serve you throughout your career, especially like fundraising. Those listening who are doing a side hustle or developing, you know, their hobby into a side hustle, into their main hustle, like you are going to be telling a story because you're going to have to tell a story to recruit people into your mission. Hey man, I found the ultimate designer. She's in Dubai. I'm trying to convince her this is what she should do with her life for the next 5 years, right? You tell her a compelling story about why, or impelling about how you are doing what you're doing. That may be the thing that's worth more than money to her, right?
Yeah.
Same thing with investors. Like a very powerful story is going to go a long way. So there's that. The other thing you mentioned is focus. And this is one that, you know, lights me up. This is one where I have very passionate feelings because I have wrestled with this. I procrastinate. We talked about in the mornings. I realized I had a hard time getting going. I found I'd be distracted during the day. I would do the thing of, oh, you know, the thing I'm working on didn't compile. I'm just going to pick my phone for a moment and scroll through TikTok, which turns into half an hour of TikTok videos, right? Or opening a YouTube video that's about something I needed to learn. But then the recommender engine is so good. It's like, well, yeah, I want to know about that. You know?
Yes.
See when I'm watching, you know, airline videos about the electrical system on the A380, whereas I was watching a video on some React tool that I'm trying to learn, right?
Yeah.
So those are very susceptible too. And that is a lot why I, you know, created the company that I created. It's a lot of what I do. And I know that there are very smart people working on the other side, trying to make sure we are distracted. And on some level, I think it's criminal.
It is. And getting that focus in, getting that focus back to be able to work on the things that we're not just doing something because we want to do it. We're passionate about it.
Hopefully, people listening to your pod, yes.
Yes, I mean, we're literally talking about hobbies and how we take that passion to profit. So hopefully, but there's something called the J curve, which you start really high, and then as you work into the passion, there's a dip, right? And then that dip is what you got to overcome by either listening to music or, you know, just focusing or have some kind of accountability. And I love that you built the app, and we're going to pivot to that next. But once we do that, I think it really goes to show what's possible. And my favorite example is building Lego sets, right? They keep you intrigued.
I love Legos as a kid.
They keep going, and then, you know, they'll help you walk you through. And that's what people need. They need a step-by-step process. Okay, I want to build a site. What's my step-by-step process? And luckily, we're living in an era that we can ask chat, like, hey, I'm trying to do this. What do I got to do? Give me the steps, and boom, we're out there. So I love that. So let's pivot to Suka. So tell me the word Suka. I know what it means from the Urdu perspective, but what was the inspiration behind it?
Let me say, I would love to give you the answer, and I will, about why it's called Suka and what this means. But let me lay this out, sort of set the table for a moment, which is we were talking a moment ago about, hey, people who listen to this pod have some ambition in life. It may be related to their hobby. They're trying to hack their way into it, side hustle their way into it, do something, right?
Yeah.
Why I'm excited to be on here, I'm so grateful that, you know, I talked about this, is I have a very strong thesis that we all have something great inside us. And the question of this lifetime is, are you going to get it out or not? And there are so many forces in the world that want your life to make sure you don't do the thing. You don't write the next great American novel. You don't create the app that does, you don't solve cold fusion. You don't, you know, start that company. You don't, but it's really hard. It's like there's a tug of war for your life. And on one side, you have trillion-dollar companies who are not embarrassed to say, our business model is stealing people's lives. Mm-hmm. And the more lives and the more time per life we steal, the better our balance sheet is. And the other side of that, there's you pulling, trying to save your life. So they can hire the best engineers, designers, behavioral psychologists on staff.
Yes.
Because they have trillions of dollars. And mm-hmm. for those listening, it is akin to like, if Zuckerberg called you up and said, Junaid, listen, I have a deal for you. I want to take your life. I'm going to sell it to these advertisers. I will keep the money. But I'll give you dancing cat videos. Is that cool? Can I have your life? Because he doesn't care if you end mm-hmm. up the 80-year-old guy on the sofa scrolling yeah. and double tapping.
Yeah.
I could have been somebody. I could have done something. You know, I could have written that book. I could have started that company.
Yeah.
And that I think is criminal. And that is a huge part of why I do what I do. So to answer your question, the thing that I do is this, is in that tug of war, I want to make sure that the people actually have something to build, something to create. They have a tool to help them to do that, to fend off the trillion-dollar companies. Mm-hmm. And it is a focus app built around flow states. And I don't think I've heard a podcast of yours where we've talked about flow states. Have you done that already? Did I miss that?
I might have, but it's not published yet.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yes. I didn't think I'd heard of the episodes yeah. I listened to. So to lay it out very quickly for people, there was a Hungarian-American psychologist, this guy, Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. His thesis was high performers, these people who changed the world, you know, they're famous. They seem to have very similar ways of talking about their concentrated states where they do the stuff that made them famous or that changed mm-hmm. the world. And he wanted to go up, you know, Mount Olympus, steal fire like Prometheus and bring it down to the rest of us.
Yeah.
So he did this across disciplines. He's like, I want to talk to athletes. I want to talk to artists. I want to talk to scientists and inventors. And when he was done, he wrote the book Flow. It is the seminal work on this. It is why we call it a flow state. Mm. And he said the most beautiful metaphor I could find was we are all on the water paddling to move ourselves forward.
Yeah.
But if we align ourselves with the current, it carries us forward. It magnifies our efforts.
Oh my God. So true.
And that is what I've dedicated my life to, is building a flow state app for people who want to drop in and say, oh my God, 2.5 hours went by. I didn't even realize it. Mm-hmm. But wow, I've done a day's worth of like real work, deep work, not painting bills and stapling things. The kind of work where you can walk into a staff meeting and say something and everyone's like, oh my God, we should do what Junaid just said. Like that yeah. changes the trajectory of our company. Or if you're building your side hustle, it changes your own life immediately. Like yeah. that's what I'm super passionate about.
Man, I love that. Flow state is amazing. Guy Hendricks mentions it as the genius zone, right? When you're in that zone, you can get so much work done. You know, you don't want to be in the incompetent zones or the competent zone. Or the zone of excellence is where most of us just hang out. But when you achieve that genius zone is where you get the real work done and create movements as well. I love
right.
it.
Right. And remember the great Michael Jordan quote where he's like, when I'm in the zone, it's just me and the ball. Yeah. And that way of saying like the entire focus shrinks down to really all that's important, which is that ball goes where I want it to.
Now, Stephen, flow is really powerful. The question mm-hmm. is, does this flow state arrive for us at different times of the day, or is it
Ooh.
Predetermined, right?
He's because talking about chronotype. What a great question.
right. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
So something, and I'll pull in a Hollywood story, which is very relevant, which is my first experience with this,
yeah.
which is chronotype is the concept that you have times of day where you are better at doing certain things. Mm. And if you know your chrono time type, you can then optimize your day by saying, oh, you know, I should be returning emails and paying bills in the afternoon. I should be doing original writing in the morning. I should be coding at night, whatever that thing is, right? And there's a famous screenwriter, Ron Bass, who wrote My Best Friend's Wedding and Rain Man and like all this stuff, right? And he famously would not talk to his family in the morning. He was like, I am not the dad that's going to be like, hey, you want pancakes? Who did their homework? And who needs a ride to school? He's like, I can't talk to you. Because once I talk to you, I can't hear my character's voices in my head. Now, he got paid $1 to $2 million a script. So his family was like, Dad, you do you. Like,
you go do you.
And you go write those scripts and bring all that money. We'll make the pancakes. We're good.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So, but it was interesting that he was that aware that like that 5 to 9 a.m., 4 to 9 a.m. window was when he could write the words that would get a Julia Roberts to say, I'll play this character, or a Tom Cruise, or a Dustin Hoffman, right?
Yeah.
Whereas he could do like collaborative work in the afternoons, you know, let's sit around and talk about story points. So that I think was fascinating. And that really comes from self-knowledge. Like once you start to look at how you work during the day, once you measure something, you can improve it, right? As you become aware of your chronotype, like for example, let me just ask you, Junaid, like what do you do at what time of day well? What is your chronotype?
I have no idea because I do find that when all the kids are asleep, I have four of them, like when they're all asleep, I'm able to focus more, or maybe when they're at school, but it's a different feeling. Like for example, I've been putting off this one task of setting up my server, and there's like some things to solve. And I was able to solve it in 2 hours, but it was past midnight. But in the daytime, it was like, okay, I got to do this. There's a lot of other things pulling for attention. So maybe that's what was keeping me from doing it.
Which is super common with friends of mine that are full-time engineers. Like I dabble now, but still there is that, oh, I'm in the zone. I'm in my, you know, flow state.
Yeah.
Late at night when no one's around to bug me. It's quiet out. The streets are quiet. There's a sense of I'm alone. I can go deep. So flow states, just to make it clear for everyone, they have a couple of characteristics that Mihai wrote about. He said, you lose track of time. You're not staring at the clock. You're not feeling distracted. Like when I first had a flow state, I'd never heard the term flow state, so I didn't know what it was. But I was on a flight from here in Austin to San Francisco. And I had some designs I wanted to do to mock up an idea to sort of explain to my team the next day. Got on the Alaska nonstop, Wi-Fi was out. 15 minutes after we took off, we were landing. I was like, the engine fell off. We're in Dallas. Like something bad happened and they just don't want to tell us. We were in SFO. I had missed about 2 hours and 40 minutes with no concept. If the drink cart came by, I didn't know who my seatmate was. You know, I don't remember the seatbelt light going on. But my designs were done. And it was a great feeling because that night I could actually go to dinner with a friend as opposed to in the hotel room, try and finish my designs for the morning. So there is that sense of like, you're focused on a task, distractions fall away, time falls away. There's a great Picasso quote about, I think he was working on Guernica at the time. He's like, yeah, I was kind of up all night. I think I didn't eat or go to the bathroom, but I mean, look what I'm working on, you know? And that's an amazing feeling when you're doing your best work and you can feel that. And he wrote, no one that he interviewed got into a flow state working on something they didn't think was meaningful. So he said, that seems to be one of the conditions precedent is you have to believe what you're doing has some meaning. And he said, also, they had to have skills that applied. So, you know, it's not Michael Jordan painting. And
or he playing baseball.
Or playing baseball. Good one. Good one. you know, and he said that they have to be challenged. Like, so it's not, you know, Michael Jordan playing with an eighth grade exhibition at his kid's high school or something. You know, it's NBA finals, like in that place where it's just like, it is you and the ball, right? So a lot of these conditions, people now standing on Mihai's shoulders have written amazing stuff, like done research on all the corners of this. You know, Kotler and Near and Cal Newport, and like so many people have indirectly or directly referenced his work to say, okay, here's that thing, whether you want to call it the genius zone, in the zone, flow state, whatever, right? The bottom line is it's a healthier way of doing more work, better work, faster. And that I think is magic. And that's why I wanted to build Suka. And I'll tell you, the ask me a question, which I sort of skirted, but I'll come back to. So you have met my wife. Laura, but had if you had met my wife, you'd probably like her better than you like me. So that's okay. So Laura and I met in yoga, which is my hobby, my side thing. It is the thing that I love to do. We have a daily practice over 10 years now. Our honeymoon, we went to Bali, which is a great place to go if you do a lot of yoga, you know, like hang out on the beach, do yoga, chill for 10 days. You know, we're married. This is so great. On the way there, I said to Laura, I have a working title for, you know, this website that I'm working on, this flow state thing. And I want to call it something cool. I don't want to call it like flow state site or, you know, distraction blocker, right? And I hope something comes to me. It's like Amazon's not called like bookstore. Nike's not called like shoe store, you know?
Yeah.
And she's like, great, I wish that for you. And I said, do you mind if when we get there the first day, let me just talk to three of our early members and say, what's your favorite thing? Like, do you love the focus music? We have like 1,000 hours of focus. Do you love the smart assistant that nudges you when you pick up your phone or you go to a distracting website? Do you love the, you know, task list and the little productivity graph for words, right? So I did this. Three people said they'd chat with me for 5-10 minutes. Did that. Third one, wrapping up. Hey, Janae, thank you. I said 10 minutes. I want to respect your time. Like, we'll go. And he said to me, he's still a member. I see him every now and then in the Sukha. He said, Stephen, you asked the wrong questions. I was like, okay, so I'll take the bait. What was the right question?
Yeah.
He's like, you should have asked me why I pay you. And I was like, we charge like 30 cents a day. It's like, I don't collect a salary for this. I do it because I think the world needs it. Mm-hmm. So we just cover the server bills. He's like, yeah. And I was like, okay, tell me why? Why do you pay me? He said, well, I found the past year or two, I have two kinds of days. I have days where at 3 o'clock, I'm playing with my kids. They're 2 and 4. Where it's 6 o'clock, I'm kind of down on myself. Like, where did the day go? I was busy, but I didn't finish the big thing. I didn't set up my server, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And he's like, I realized the difference is that morning, did I open up your website and run it in the background while I was working? So I pay you because my kids are not going to be 2 and 4 forever.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow. Okay. Thank you. That is a way better answer than anything I was looking for.
Yeah.
So I went to dinner with Laura. I told her this. She's like, that dude is super articulate and you should pay him as a copywriter, right? And we were going to bed and she looked at me and she goes, you know, in yoga, we hear all these Sanskrit terms for like prana, your life force, and karma and dharma.
Mm.
You wanted the universe to speak to you. It did through this guy. That's sukha. That's that feeling of self-fulfillment when you're in your lane, doing what you're meant to do, and you're good at it. You can do it with ease. She's like, there's your name. And I went to bed on my phone, looked up the Sukha company. It was available, bought it for $14.
Boom.
Done. We had a name.
There it is. Man, that's so powerful. Thank you for sharing the story, your articulation, the storytelling. I mean, you mentioned earlier how powerful storytelling is. And we have done this for 38 minutes, which is really powerful.
38 minutes, I love it.
we got so much done. We got so much captured here. And there's so many lessons in here. And so whoever's listening, you know, if this makes sense to you, right, find the people that are working with you. Why are they paying? Why are they in your circle? Right?
Yep.
What's inspiring them? What's the vision that they see that you have? Because maybe you haven't articulated it well enough, but maybe they might come back and tell you, this is why I'm here with you. So, Stephen, thank you so much. This was absolutely amazing. The questions I had were like, you know, were really random questions. I mean, not random, but very specific based on your journey, based on where you were. But this was so much better than what the questions would have pulled because, you know, the
thank
real
you for
conversation.
Having me on.
Is absolutely. Now, we do have a part two that we kind of teased in the intro. So
I heard about this.
We're going to have to figure out a time and do that recording. But Stephen, thank you so much. This was absolutely amazing. Share the link to, well, you just mentioned the sukhacompany.com.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So yeah, and it's actually thesukha, thesukha.co for company.
Perfect. Thesukha.co We'll have the links in the show notes. Thank you so much. Your journey really shows how reinvention and curiosity can lead to new season of impact seasons.
It's fun.
And
so
you've done exactly that. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you guys for listening.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much, Stephen, for coming, and we'll see you in the next one.
Okay.
Guys, in part two, Stephen's going to share his best tips and techniques to focus better, get more done, and build your business faster. If you've ever struggled with distraction, this next episode is for you. Stay tuned. You won't want to miss it. And please check the links for the Suka app so that you can find more time in your day and live that flow state. All right. We'll see you in the next one. Catch you later.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this episode on Hacks and Hobbies. We absolutely appreciate your contribution. You can find additional notes on hacksandhobbies.com. Please share the podcast with your friends and tell them what you learned about our guest today.